Today's episode is brought to you by Sweat Connected. Sweat Connected is a transformative way to work out. Sweat Connected has a mission to help you feel your best. Each expert instructor brings their signature method directly to you wherever you are in the world via Zoom. When you take a Sweat Connected class, you are able to interact with your instructor and the other participants in the class as well, just like you would in a live studio experience. Whether you have been a group fitness participant for years or are newer, you will feel at home with Sweat Connected. Sweat Connected is exclusively offering our listeners 50% off their first class by going to sweatconnected.com and using the promo code POD. That's P-O-D, POD, at sweatconnected.com for 50% off your first class. Sweat Connected is for all levels, all ages, all sizes, and all humans. Whether you're quarantined in the house or not, you still don't want your gym bag being all nasty. Our sponsor today, Manscaped, is here to make sure your stuff stays in check. Manscaped promotes clean hygiene when it comes to your junk thanks to their Lawnmower 3.0. Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming. While you're probably at home looking for something to do, why not make manscaping a part of your new routine? You don't want to look like you're sitting on Ming's shoulders from WCW. And you don't want Brutus the Barber Beefcake chomping away down there. And you dang sure don't want to use that Freebird hair removal cream. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0. Precision engineered tools for your family jewels. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof, cordless body trimmer, and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. This third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Your goods are going to be nick free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin safe technology. Inside the perfect package, you'll also find the Manscaped Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing deodorant and moisturizer. You're probably sitting on the couch like Al Bundy right now anyway, so you might as well keep everything smooth and fresh. Subscribe to the Perfect Package and get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer stays fresh and clean. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts: the Shed Travel Bag, $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. This is the perfect package for your perfect package. Get 20% off and free shipping with code SLOPDROP at manscaped.com. That's SLOPDROP, S-L-O-P-D-R-O-P. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com by using the promo code SLOPDROP, S-L-O-P-D-R-O-P.
That's a slop drop. I can answer that. That's a slop drop. What is that move? That's a slop drop.
Slop drop time. That's a slop drop. Oh, that is a slop drop. It's a slop drop.
Slop drop, slop drop.
A slop drop.
The slop drop indeed.
What's up, humanoids? Welcome back to the Slop Drop. This is Nathan Rogers at WooPig Sumo on Twitter. And my tag partner for this episode is the one and the only, the unluckiest man in the whole wide world, at Bad Luck Chapman on Twitter. What's going on, man?
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm good. We're going to kick it and rewind and go back in time. 32 years ago this week, NWA Clash of Champions 4, Seasons Beatings, December 7th, 1988. From the UTC Arena in Chattanooga, Tennessee. About 8,000 in attendance, had a 4.5 TV rating, a little over 2 million viewers. It was free on TBS.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Superstation TBS. We are live coming to you from the UTC Arena in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It's Seasons Beatings, Clash of Champions 4. And what a night of wrestling excitement we're going to see. The finals of the United States
commentators Jim Ross and Bob Caudle. Special hosts was the one and only Tony Schiavone, the total package Lex Luger, and the interviewer
Magnum TA. This is about 2 years after Magnum was in that horrible car crash that ended his wrestling career and nearly ended his life. It was quite different seeing Magnum TA doing the interviews. Champions going into this event, the world champion was Ric Flair. U.S. champion was Barry Windham. TV champ was Mike Rotunda. The world tag champs was the Midnight Express. Six-man tag champs was the Road Warriors and Dusty Rhodes. And the U.S. tag titles were vacant.
You talk about Magnum TA and what a horrible incident that turned out to be. But, you know, a lot of people don't talk about his interviewing career or kind of what he did afterwards. And it's a shame. He had a great in-ring career. I'm glad they kept him around after he got hurt. But, you know, that was just a bad ordeal. You know, he was in line to be the next big thing. And,
course, the stepfather of Tessa Blanchard. You know, I mentioned those tag belts was vacant. The Barbarian, the Warlord, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, the Sheepherders, more famously known as the Bushwhackers, had all recently jumped ship to the WWF. Midnight Express had won the NWA World Tag Team titles, so they vacated the U.S. titles in a tournament set up. It was supposed to come down to the Fantastics versus the Sheepherders, but since they had bolted the WWF, a little substitution was going on. A makeshift tag team of Ron Simmons and Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. Should be noted, Jason Harvey from the Wonder Years was at ringside. Say all that, to say this. The first match of the card, the Fantastics, which is Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers, defeated Eddie Gilbert and Ron Simmons in over 27 minutes by pinfall.
His arm just hit the post for the third time. Fulton's got it rolled up. And we've got two United States Tag Team Champions.
To win the vacated NWA U.S. tag titles after Fulton pin Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert with a roll-up.
Man, what a great, great team on both sides. You know, those are some big, big names, you know, like you said, 32 years later. But, man, I tell you, NWA, they were kind of hurting right here. They, you know, all those teams, the Bushwhackers, Tully and Arn, Barbarian, all those guys, they were big, big tag team names, and they all jumped ship, and it was a kick in the, you know, in the lower region for them.
Loved the Fantastics when I was little. I can remember watching them on, you know, we had like antenna TV or whatever, Mid-South wrestling, or it was a Bill Watts promotion came on. They didn't care about copyright stuff back then, so they would use whatever music they wanted to. And I can always remember they'd come out to Sharp Dressed Man by ZZ Top. Weird memories of the Fantastics other than they could just deliver a hell of a drop kick, but major baby faces. They actually got some boos from the crowd in this match. I think partly because they were in Chattanooga. Eddie Gilbert was a Tennessee guy, probably a fan favorite. The Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert, one of the most underrated and overlooked wrestlers there ever was. Super talented, way ahead of his time. Passed away in 1995 at only the age of 33. And no doubt he would contribute some way, form, or fashion if he was alive today.
Oh, absolutely, man. And like you said, overlooked and underrated. That guy was just amazing, amazing. And, you know, it's a shame that he passed away at such a young age because, you know, something like AEW or Ring of Honor even could really use his mind alone for so much. But, you know, it's a shame.
You mentioned the Sheepherders. Dude, they were some bad mamma jammas when they were called the Sheepherders. When they went to DeVince, you know, they kind of got a little cartoonish, was more kid-friendly. But when they were the Sheepherders, they were some crazy New Zealand guys who bled all the time and was just nuts. And, you know, a lot of people missed out on that. But, hey, can't blame them for going where the money was. They had a long career in WWF and turned out to be Hall of Famers.
You know, I've had the privilege over the years with Mid-States to meet a lot of the guys that I grew up watching, a lot of the legends, Hall of Famers and stuff. And I got to tell you, man, Bushwhacker Luke was probably the best guy out of all of them that I've met. It's just so cool. We went and ate dinner and, man, the thing about the Bushwhackers from the Sheepherders is like, man, Luke is Bushwhacker Luke 24/7. You know, when we went out, he had crab legs, and dude, he was doing the Bushwhacker gimmick but he was doing it with the crab. I mean, it was just hilarious. Just a stand-up, good dude. And like I said, probably one of the best, coolest guys I've met out of all the legends. And just a great guy.
Tony Schiavone and Lex Luger talked about Lex's big rematch with NWA World Champ Ric Flair at Starrcade, which is set to take place in just a few weeks after this event on December 26th. 1988.
Once again, as it was once before, the Fantastics become U.S. Tag Team Champions here in Chattanooga at the UTC Arena. What a tremendous win for them. And in the same breath, hot stuff, Eddie Gilbert. What a tremendous effort for this young man, even with that injured arm.
Well, Tony, you know, if that's any indication of intensity, the kind of match we see tonight, boy, better hold on to your seats. This is a showcase event. It's a national TV in front of millions of homes. It serves a dual purpose. Number one, you know we want to be at your best when you're in front of that many people. And number two, this is a major, big-time tune-up for the big event coming up, and that is Starrcade True Grit just over 2 weeks from now, Tony.
And, of course, that's your big night against the World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair, who will be in a tag team match tonight. He and Barry Windham against the Midnight Express.
I do have to say I have a special vested interest in watching here tonight. I try to get a match. Try to get a match lined up with Nature Boy, but soon we have other plans. So what I'm talking about is I'm sitting here, I'm watching real close, and I'm scouting Nature Boy out. But I would much prefer to have my tights on after watching a match like that to sit here at the booth.
Yeah, it was a tremendous match. It almost went the time limit. We do understand, though, that right now we do have to go back to the ring.
Jim Ross interviewed Mike Rotunda and Kevin Sullivan at ringside, talking about Rotunda's future TV title defense against Rick Steiner at the upcoming Starrcade.
Champion Mike Rotunda. And, of course, it's at Starrcade on the day after Christmas on December 26th. I've got to think it is going to be a phenomenal event for the television championship. These fans here are cheering for Rick Steiner. And everybody says, well, Steiner's not too smart. But he's not going to be the one that's 40 feet up in the air. He's not so stupid.
I'll tell you what about being stupid. Stupid Steiner is so stupid.
How stupid is he, Mike?
He's stupid enough to think that he's going to take the title from me, Kevin. Is he a moron or what?
Rick Steiner is so dumb, Michael.
How dumb is he, Kevin?
He's so dumb that he thinks incarcerating me 40 feet in the air is going to keep me from doing anything.
Wasn't Houdini your cousin?
You know he was, Michael, and the other thing is this. Rick Steiner, I've been incarcerated many times, and I've always escaped. Michael, tell him what's going to happen to Bubble Brain.
Steiner, first of all, you're a Michigan graduate. That doesn't leave you with much right there. Second of all, you got to face a Syracuse University graduate, my friend. In Starrcade, you think you can get the job done? Well, I'm leaving with this, Steiner, at all costs, my friend.
Rotunda and Sullivan, varsity club members, love the varsity club. I don't think there's any reason why a promotion cannot use this faction now and make it work. I mean, you've got former MMA guys. You've got former collegiate wrestlers. It would work so perfect, man. And I love that idea, but
for whatever reason. You got Brock Lesnar, Shelton Benjamin.
Exactly.
All these deep wrestlers, man, that could really do it. You know, and it's a shame because a lot of the kids. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and a lot of the kids nowadays don't even know who the varsity club was. You know, Kevin Sullivan, you know, when the people see him, if they remember him.
They think of the devil.
Yeah, the Dungeon of Doom. You know what I mean? The dark sided devil, you know, fought with Chris Benoit, that whole deal. And then, you know, then you got IRS, Erwin R. Shyster. You know, they just don't remember the varsity club. And it's a shame because they had some of the best matches back in the day that there were.
They're out there at ringside to see the newest member, Dr. Death Steve Williams, leads into the second match. Dr. Death Steve Williams defeated the Italian Stallion a little over 15 minutes by pinfall after Oklahoma Stampede.
Catches him in midair. Uh-oh. You can measure this one on the Richter scale.
Stampede.
The Oklahoma Stampede. And when he nails you with that one, it is over.
Of course, you know, and if you're listening to our show frequently, you know I love Dr. Destiny Williams, one of my all-time favorites. But to play armchair booker here, honestly, this match is way too long. Doc had just turned heel and joined the varsity club. In my opinion, they should have used this as a way to get him over as a heel and squash his babyface opponent, not to go over 15 minutes with the Italian Stallion.
Absolutely. You know, this was a time when they needed to make him just not only a heel, but a heel monster, you know, because he was. Back then, man, you know, and it's a shame if anybody remembers him during the Brawl for All, because if that's all you've ever seen of him, you need to go back and see his work in, you know, in the 80s and stuff. This match here probably shouldn't last over 5 minutes.
No, and no disrespect to the Italian Stallion, but yeah. Dr. Death was just on a much different level.
Well, he was a legit monster. You know, he was just a big, big man, and he could wrestle, he could fight. You know, he was the total package. You know, no pun intended. But he could do it all, and this should have been a squash match. And really, unless it was a main event on a pay-per-view or a semi-main, every match of his should have been a squash match back in the day.
Because if it was legit, it would have been.
So Magnum TA then interviewed the Junkyard Dog, welcoming JYD to the NWA.
I'm Magnum TA, and I got some good news to report to the NWA. Long time Paul Jones been strutting around here. Now he's run Nikita Koloff out of professional wrestling, but there's a man coming in, the Junkyard Dog, 6'4", 325 rump and stomping pounds, has come here to take care of business.
You know, man, I was on my way to North Cackalacka, by the way of South Cackalacka, Virginia, and all those and my telephone left the room, and they said, "Dog, everybody needs a bone to chew." And Colo said, "Dog, I need some help." And I took my hat off, and I told my wife, "I'm on my way to the NAA." So I'm 6'4", 325 pounds. I'm nothing but twisted steel and no sex appeal. But I'm going to tell you something, baby. It's not recess time, so I'm not here to play. I'm here to match and stay.
You're going to get your chance. December 26th, Starrcade 1988. You and Ivan Koloff going up against a Russian assassin and a very special stipulation. Because when you put them down, the Russian assassin's got to unmask and Paul Jones will be forced into retirement.
Paul Jones ain't nothing but the devil. And I'm the only man that stepped in the devil's door, kicked the door down, and I made his natural mama frown. So Paul Jones, if you want to mess around, and like I told you time and time again, every dog needs a bone to chew, and I found myself a bone.
Well, that's it. The JYD found himself a bone. He's going to take care of business. Take care of business the Junkyard Dog's way. Let's go back ringside right now with Jim Ross.
Again, we mentioned it just a second ago. NWA was losing a lot of talent right now to the WWF. Bringing in JYD was a way to get instant name recognition with somebody that had historically been over with the crowd. Third match, Ivan Koloff, with one arm tied behind his back, defeated Paul Jones in a little over 8 minutes. The stipulation was Ivan had to have an arm tied behind his back. Jones attempted to use a foreign object, but Koloff grabs it, nails him with it, gets the three count. After the match, the masked Russian assassins, which was the Angel of Death and Jack Victory under the hoods, attack Koloff. Fans start throwing crap into the ring. Junkyard Dog comes out and makes the save.
Ivan just nailed Jones with a foreign object that Jones brought in the ring. He just beat Paul Jones with one hand tied behind him. Ivan Koloff has just beaten Paul Jones.
Wait a minute, watch out. They're the assassins. Well, he still got a hand tied behind his back.
The Russian team, we knew they probably wouldn't be far behind, and they are kicking Ivan Koloff into oblivion. The fans here are irate at this situation. They're double and triple teaming Ivan Koloff, who has beaten Paul Jones with one hand tied behind him.
Just weird to see Ivan as a face here. Of course, they're trying to fill in the gap because Nikita Koloff was actually home with his sick wife. Nikita had just gotten married a few months prior to this event, and his new wife was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease and sadly ended up passing away just a little 6 months after this.
Well, you got to think, you know, and kids nowadays or younger guys nowadays may think that, you know, the one arm tied behind his back, oh, that's, you know, that's nothing. You know, but back then, man, that was you know, that was your hardcore matches. That was your TLT or Money in the Bank or whatever. That was a big, big deal, you know. And to prove that it was a big deal, the fans were throwing stuff in the ring that did, you know, that didn't happen every night. That wasn't something you had to have either extremely, extremely good. Well, it's not either. You had to have really good to get the fans to start throwing stuff in.
Yeah, the whole Russian thing was still hot back then. And then, of course, with Ivan defecting from Russia, now a babyface for the USA, the Russians attack him. And, of course, you know, like you said, instant heat.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, you almost have to have that four horsemen heat. You know, when they, and not to get off topic, but when they were battling with Dusty, when it was Flair and Dusty and they were breaking Dusty's arm or whatever the case may be, you know, you had to have that kind of heat to get people to throw stuff in the ring. And the fact that they were able to switch him from a heel to a baby face, you know, that says a lot. That was really cool that the crowd got behind him for that. And then, of course, JYD came out, looked like $1 million. And JYD, you know, he kind of, his wrestling career ended way too soon, too, I believe. But, you know, he was a huge, huge name back then, too. And it was really a big score for the NWA to get it.
Okay, back with the total package, Lex Luger. And Ivan Koloff wins the match. The Russian Assassins come in. And to the aid of Ivan Koloff, the Junkyard Dog, and I'm sure he really needed the help right there.
Well, I'll tell you, it looks like the Russian Assassin, Paul Jones, are about on a page out of the tactics book of the Horsemen. Obviously, 2-on-1, 3-on-1. But they had a little surprise for themselves there when the JYD came down. I've been an admirer of his for a long time. He's a man I think Ivan Koloff can depend on in a situation like that, as we well saw.
Okay, let's talk about situations. Coming up next, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, going up against Road Warrior Animal. The winner of that match will be able to claim the World Six-Man Tag Team title. But I'm not so sure that's what's in the mind of Road Warrior Animal right now. They've tried to take out Sting. They've tried to take out Dusty Rhodes. Who knows where they're going to go, Lex?
You know, it's a situation. I've been back in the locker just a while ago. The tension. First of all, you got a big event tonight and millions of homes across national TV. And Tony, lots at stake. And you add in the thing with the Road Warriors, and it's something nobody understands. It's a situation where the tension back there right now is so thick. I see Dusty, he's pacing back and forth. It's so tension so thick, I hate to borrow a cliche, but you can cut it with a knife. And the situation with the Road Warriors being that people love, always loved the Bad Boys, the Road Warriors. You know, they've always loved that image of the Road Warriors with the paint and the leather and the spikes. But you see, it goes much further than that now. They're not just bad boys anymore. We all got people we support, moms we have to feed. They tried to break Stinger's neck. They tried to take Dusty Rhodes' eye out. This is much more serious. This is a black mark on all professional wrestling. Now, I'll tell you, I don't know what they're going to do next. I really can't understand where their heads are at all.
I think that's a good point, Lex. And it'll be for, of course, to claim that World Six-Man Tag Team title. Dusty Rhodes has held that belt before. And, of course, if Road Warrior Animal wins, he and Road Warrior Hawk will select their partner.
Magnum TA interviewed Rick Steiner. Steiner working that ridiculous angle where he talks to his hand. He had a little face painted on his hand and called him Alex. Why? I have no idea. But he ends the interview with, Mike Rotunda, I'm going to beat you to death.
Rick Steiner, you know, this is my first opportunity to really interview you since you made your break from the varsity club. And I've been watching your wrestling style real closely, you know. And your specialty, your forte, you may say, seems to be that belly-to-belly suplex.
Yeah, you know, I've been in training, you know, and I've been eating a lot of fortes and suplex. And I had muscle.
No. Today. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that wrestling style of yours, that belly-to-belly suplex. That's the same thing I used to use.
You used to use that?
Yeah, I used to use that.
I use it.
Well, you do it real good, and I'm saying.
Oh, thanks, yeah. Alex taught me how to do it. He talked to me real good. He talks to me all the.
Well, wait a minute. You know, let's talk about Alex.
You haven't met Alex yet.
No, but Alex is just kind of like an extension of your personality. I mean, Alex isn't, I mean, he isn't a person.
No, Alex is all about, he's his own man. He tells me what to do all the time. He's the only guy, he helps me out, you know?
Well, just how long have you and Alex been together?
Years and years.
Well, I hope Alex is getting you ready because you got a shot at the World Television title coming up at Starrcade, and I hope he's got you geared up because it's coming up and it's the biggest match of a lifetime.
Mike Rotunda, I'm going to beat you to death!
You know, out of the Steiner brothers, out of both of them, Rick was always my favorite. You know, he just, the dog face gremlin, he looked like $1 million. I think he does real estate now or something, but, you know, he, and nothing against Scott Steiner, but Rick could actually talk. You know, yeah, I don't like the pain of the hand thing, but he carried on a conversation. You know, it wasn't 2/3 and 25% of 6,300,000, you know, 3 1/10 chance of winning or whatever the heck Scott said, but, you know, Rick, I think, was better on the mic. I think he had better wrestling skills, and he looked rougher, but obviously Scott always had the body, the physique. You know, his bicep had a bicep, and,
yeah,
and, you know, but, you know, a lot of people don't remember Rick as a singles wrestler, and Rick was really good.
What was crazy is after Turner took over NWA, made it WCW, there was a time there they wanted Rick Steiner to beat Ric Flair within minutes and become the new champion.
Man, and I'm telling you, like, that's what I'm saying. A lot of guys don't realize how good Rick actually was in the ring. And, you know, was he Ric Flair material?
No.
I don't think so. But, you know, he could have easily held the TV title or United States title and had a very good long run with it. Rick was a worker. He was a workhorse. And if you go back and even watch the old Steiner Brothers matches, you know, Rick was always the ultimate babyface because he was always the one that got beat down and made the hot tag to Scott. You know, it just how it worked. But Rick was a lot of talent. And, you know, I don't think that he was Flair's level, but I'm partial because there's only a couple people that I think are Flair's level. But as a TV champion or U.S. champion or whatever, yeah, I think he could have had a great run.
His son Bronson is starting to turn some heads too. I think there's some people interested in signing him, including AEW and NXT, which I think would be really cool.
Man, I tell you, that's one thing that I love, and I know we'll talk about AEW in a little bit, but AEW with the third and fourth generation stars that they've got, it's just it's cool. Brian Pillman Jr., you know, I love Brian Pillman Jr. MLW, you know, I know we've talked about it. It took me a while to watch it, but that's why I love Davey Boy Smith Jr.
Who is now a free agent, by the way.
Hey, Tony Khan, you probably need to check in on that. But that's what I'm saying. You know, I love that. That's one thing I love about AEW is they're bringing all these second, third, fourth generation guys back, and it's really, really cool to see.
Fourth match in that, Road Warrior Animal defeated Dusty Rhodes in under 3 minutes by disqualification after pushing the ref out of the ring and then using a chair on Animal.
Remember, the disqualification rule has been waived. Ooh, what a clothesline! Big clothesline by the American Dream. You can cut the intensity with a knife here on the floor of the UTC Arena. And Rhodes just knocked the referee right out of the ring. That's not too smart.
He's got a figure four locked in too, Jim. Here's Ellering.
Ellering hammering away Rhodes right in the eye. Here's Hawk. Hawk now. Hawk, this mesh is breaking down. Hawk and Animal.
No referee in the ring, and it's completely out of hand.
Rhodes. Rhodes threw the referee out of the ring. He needed to get disqualified. They're trying to set him up just like Sting. Here comes the Stinger. The Stinger is cooking. They don't want to wait. The Starrcade on December 26th. Rhodes has a chair. One eye or not, he's back in the ring. Rhodes wants to break the leg of Animal. Sting and Hulk are fighting outside. Rhodes has destroyed that steel chair. Hulk throwing it to the railing. And Sting and the American Dream are standing tall.
Lots to unpack here. So Road Warriors and Dusty were the current six-man tag team champions, but the Road Warriors had turned on Dusty a few weeks prior to this, and the titles were somewhat in limbo. So the stipulation was that the winner gets the six-man tag team titles and then could choose who they wanted to be the partners. Also, the DQ rule was waived, so if someone got DQ'd, then their opponent wins the titles. Paul Ellering gets involved. Road Warrior Hawk comes out, attacks Dusty. It's 3-on-1. Sting, you can just hear Tony Schiavone now, it's Sting, comes out, makes the save, and as mentioned earlier, Dusty ultimately DQ'd. Basically, this was a way to set up the tag team match at Starrcade, which would be Dusty's exit from the company. At this event, Dusty was no longer the booker. He'd been in some trouble over an angle that actually led to this match with the Road Warriors, where he had him to use a spike to his eye, bled all over the place on TV, which is something the new owners did not want on TBS. Turner had bought out Jim Crockett just about a month before this, and TBS was very clear they didn't want bloody segments on their TV. Dusty kind of defied this and as a result lost his job as a head booker, wrestled up until Starrcade again just a few weeks after this, and then was fired, headed to the WWF to don the black and yellow polka dots.
Ironically, his son, Dustin Rhodes, many years later, would also bleed all over the place when he wasn't supposed to, and also got fired. But different story, different time. the fact that the Road Warriors went on, you know, and it's sad because they knew, you know, and I'm sure Dusty knew he was on his way out. You know, the writing was on the wall, I assume. But I don't think – I like the idea that Animal went over because to make him look strong because Animal, Hawk and Animal were both just beasts. But I don't think that – I don't think it needed to be by DQ so much as like the three-on-one. I agree, like if Ellering would have held his foot or done some extra stuff, or if just Hawk would have came out and done something, I get it. But they made Dusty even, I think without realizing it, they made Dusty matter more and raise him up even more as a babyface before they fired him than what they should have done. You know, typically like Vince, they didn't tear Dusty down, which is fine. But I think they may have built him up a little bit too much before they let him go.
Tony Schiavone, Lex Luger, that was a wild ending to that match, wasn't it?
I'll tell you, Tony Schiavone, this is a prayer that, I mean, I got to take my jacket off because I'm getting the adrenaline flowing just like everybody else in the arena, anybody out there watching. This is a prayer that if this is a thing to come and start getting to, boy, we're going to blow the roof off that joint in Norfolk, Virginia, Therese, because, man, now I got to sit here and watch a Nature Boy wrestle, boy. I don't know if I can contain myself.
Let's talk about six-man tag titles. Tony Khan has openly admitted that he's considering bringing back these as trio titles. What's your thoughts on that?
So, I mean, it's been no secret. I'm not a huge, huge tag fan. I'm getting there more with AEW. I'm getting to like the tag teams more. They need a different – they need another title, a mid-card title, belt, in my opinion, more than they need a six-man or a trio title. I'm just not buying it. I don't like the I didn't like New Day when they did the Freebird thing where they each any of them could defend it, and I don't like it. If they want to do the Freebird rules with the tag champs at, you know, as a trio, I can get behind that, but I don't care for the six-man tag belts.
I think I'm with you. I think I know they've got plenty of talent right now, and that's one thing I'm worried about. Their roster is starting to get a little bit inflated, so, and there's a lot of stables. So I guess one way to make those stables mean something and some of those people stand out is throw the trio tag titles on them. As far as another belt, I got mixed emotions.
I will give a shout out to Tony Khan. Not that he knows who I am or anything or matters, but he actually, I just read where he did an interview and they were talking about how inflated his roster was and that maybe he had too much talent for not enough TV time. And he openly came out and said, until this pandemic's over, he's not firing anybody and everybody's going to get a paycheck. And obviously he's going to have to do that. But kudos to you for doing that.
For sure. Props to him. While we're talking about AEW and just talked about Sting coming out and assisting Dusty Rhodes in this match, Sting at the age of 61 recently made his AEW debut on December 2nd edition of Dynamite. I know you marked out big time for that. Have you come back down yet? Or are you still up on Cloud 9?
Yeah, I'm still on Cloud 9. I love it. I just can't wait to watch it again tonight, man. And you know, it just, let me tell you something. And that's what, you know, there's been a lot of critics on TV, or I'm sorry, not on TV, but on the internet that are just down in it. Oh man, it's an old man. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to see him. Let me tell you guys something, for all you idiots out there. This dude sold more shirts in a 24-hour period on Pro Wrestling Tees than anybody else in the history of that company. He set a new record at 61 years old. He, you know, Sting is a very humble person since he's been, you know, he found God, got saved, more power to him. That is great, great news. But he's really changed. He's very, very humble. And if you notice, he never would say anything bad about Vince or about the WWE yet. He wouldn't do any of that, but everybody knows he wasn't happy. I mean, he lost every match he was in. You know, all Vince did was bring him in, bury him, put him in the WWE Hall of Fame, which I can assure you Sting doesn't give two craps about. He's a pro wrestling Hall of Famer all over the world. And, you know, and he's already done more and meant more on AEW and has more people talking than what he did in the WWE. Can he wrestle one-on-one? Probably not. He can, but he probably won't. But these little tag team or six-man tag team matches, whatever they have planned for him, where he can go 5 or 7 minutes at a time in the ring, I think he'll do flawlessly. And, you know, again, for the critics, I'm going to call you guys idiots, catch some heat, whatever. But this dude is the talk of the town right now everywhere at 61 years old. So think about that.
How do you think that he should be used? As an in-ring performer, as a authority figure, as a manager, or obviously he's already an on-screen role, so he'll probably do some contributions backstage. I mean, obviously he's a legend. I'm sure he can share a wealth of knowledge to some of the young guys back there. But as far as on-screen, what do you think he should be doing?
So I've been kind of torn. You know, I think I first said authority role just because AEW needs it so bad. But God, if they would bring Bischoff back for that, that'd be just, you know, that'd be great. But I just don't know about Sting. I think Sting will be more of maybe a manager, or not necessarily a manager, but maybe a mentor to Darby. You know, because Darby's okay on the mic, don't get me wrong, but he's not great. Where Sting is just phenomenal on the mic, and he can kind of be there, have his, can be painted face, whatever, and he can cut a 3-minute promo and just have the crowd eating out the palm of his hands for Darby to get in to wrestle. Maybe every now and then get in as a tag team. I want to see Sting in the ring, but I don't want to see Sting in the ring. I don't want him to get hurt, you know, any more than what he already is. But I think as a manager role, or mentor role, whatever you want to call it, and then backstage, I think that'd be his best use right now.
Yeah, I think, like you said earlier, put him in some tag matches. Now that there's
I gotta cut you off, but man, when he went out and got face to face with Arn Anderson, some of you guys that don't know, that didn't watch WCW growing up, don't realize how big that was. Man, that was two huge, huge WCW guys face to face, and they haven't been face to face in 20 years.
Especially on TNT. Speaking of them, of course, Arn associated with the Horsemen. Main event time, fifth match, Ric Flair and Barry Windham beat the Midnight Express, Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane. 17 minutes and 41 seconds when Windham pinned Eaton.
Eaton with another right hand to the jaw, the Nature Boy. Inside, upside down. Watch out. Well, I thought we had him right on top of us that time. And Flair came right down the ring. Windham sent for the ride, great athletic ability. The big youngster from Sweetwater. Drop kick by Stan Lane. Bobby has tied back in. Double goozle. They hit Windham high, and they hit him low. And he goes down. There's Bobby going up top. Windham lies helpless in the ring. He drops the leg right across Barry Windham. This should be it. J.J. Dillon's up there. Dillon's got his shoe off.
Flair in the ring.
Cornette's got Dillon, but Flair. Rick Flair just nailed Bobby Eaton in the back of the head with a shoe and rolled Windham on top.
Oh, no, he's counting out.
Midnights hit the double goozle on Windham, setting up an Alabama jam from Eaton. The ref is distracted by Lane going after Dillon. Flair steals J.J. Dillon's shoe, nails Eaton, puts Barry on him for the win. Man.
Big names right here, boys. Big.
Yeah, Barry Windham coming to the ring looking like a damn man ought to look like as a wrestler. And, of course, we have talked at length about how underrated and amazing Bobby Eaton is, but all four of these guys, what a heck of a main event. Mentioned earlier, September 88, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard left to go to WWF. Flair and Windham and Dillon continue to refer to themselves as the Horsemen. The NWA flirted a little bit by bringing in some new members. They didn't officially reform as the Four Horsemen until late 89 and used various members, Sting being one of them. Still my favorite faction of all time, Midnight Express. One of the greatest tag teams of all time, definitely on my Mount Rushmore of tag teams, should be in the Hall of Fame, WWE Hall of Fame.
Well, you know, I agree 100%, but they're not going to be as long as Cornette's around. And I don't mean any disrespect to Cornette, because I like Cornette, I like listening to his stuff, but his mouth is they're just not going to do it. I don't believe anyway.
You can't blame him either.
Well, no, you can't. You know, he's so controversial. You know, and everything. But you said, took the words out of my mouth, Barry Windham looking like a pro wrestling man should look like. That dude came out 6 feet, whatever he was, 4 or 5. Just, you know, he kind of, when he would walk, he kind of just had that slow, nonchalant, like he didn't have a care in the world. he'd get in that ring and he'd whoop your butt. And man, that lariat that he had, he just, man, he was it back then.
When he would leapfrog somebody, he would basically just run, just kind of step over him. He wouldn't even really have to jump much.
I think Arn says. Man, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I think Arn said he hardly spent a day in the gym. He was just that natural of an athlete and that natural of a wrestler.
Yeah, Arn actually said on his podcast, Barry never went to the gym. He just didn't have to. He'd go out and he'd live the horseman lifestyle and drink and party and do all that. And he'd just go and wake up, crawl out of bed, and then go work a match and put on a 5-star match.
Yeah.
And I know what you're talking about when you're talking about that leapfrog. He'd run and he just kind of raises
his just kind of run just over you. Step
up. He was just so good. And I see a lot of Hangman Adam Page. I see a lot of Hangman.
Just not quite as tall.
Or a lot of. Yeah, he was the mini me version, but
yeah.
You know, he could really be something. And I hope he keeps this cowboy-esque kind of thing like Barry did. I hope he keeps it going because, man, Hangman could be a huge, huge top star, just like Barry. You know, he does the lariat too. He jumps over the rope, which I don't think Barry can ever do, but, you know, he could just step over it. So, but he,
I mean, all four of these guys, like you said, could have a 5-star match with a broom. I mean, if you go back, for those listening, fire up the WWE Network. If you watch any match on this card, make it this one.
Absolutely. Best match of the night, you know, and it just, yeah, those are some of the biggest names in wrestling, you know, and back then they were, I won't say they were just getting started, but they hadn't peaked yet. They were still on the uphill climb, still doing great. And you do yourself a favor and watch that match. It was just so good.
Tony Schiavone interviewed Jim Cornette after the match.
It was a tremendous tag team event. I know Jim Cornette, it ended not exactly like you wanted, and you're very upset right now.
What you had right there was four guys that are the best in the world at what they do, and they got in the ring, and they beat each other half to death right here in Chattanooga, Tennessee, brother. And just like I told J.J. Dillon, let them play, let them go, because Ric Flair, whatever anybody else thinks of him, he's the best wrestler that has ever set foot in a wrestling ring. Barry Windham coming to his own at the Midnight Express, I still claim, and they proved it there. Are the equal or better of any tag team combination that's ever been in this sport. That's why I said, let them go. Let's see what happens. And they beat each other half to death. And Bobby Eaton proved he's been fighting since he was 5 years old. You can ask anybody in Huntsville, Alabama. And he stood toe-to-toe with you, Ric Flair. And Stan Lane, he's got more guts in his little pinky than Barry Windham does in his whole stinking body. Because Stan Lane stood toe-to-toe with Barry Windham. So it was up to J.J. Dillon. And J.J., I had my eye on you through the whole thing. And I knew when I come over there, you were trying something sneaky. So I give you a whop. Little did I know that she was going to fumble its way into the ring. And Ric Flair picked it up. And that's the thing that I can't stand, that I can't believe. That Ric Flair, you had to stoop. Because you know you were about to be embarrassed on national television. You had to stoop to taking J.J. Dillon's shoe and whopping Bobby Eaton in the head with it. Well, let me tell you something. There ain't going to be nothing like that going on at Starrcade. Because if you get disqualified, Ric Flair, you're going to lose that title. And in the meantime, J.J. Dillon, I'm going to say this to you. The Midnight Express proved beyond a shadow of a doubt just exactly how good they are. We've already started fixing the horsemen. There's two of them left, and that's Flair and Windham. And J.J., if you've got the guts to sign a contract, we want another match. Maybe bring it back here to Chattanooga, Tennessee, brother. And we are going to fix Ric Flair and fix Barry Windham. Because for the past 6 weeks now, the Midnight Express and Jim Cornette have got dumped on and dumped on heavy. We got beat for the World Tag Team titles through questionable circumstances. You got the original Midnight Express brother coming here and think they're going to do something. And now this. Well, let me say this. We are back in business again. The Midnight Express and Jim Cornette, bigger and better than ever. And we're going to get our self-respect back. We are going to take the first step, the tip of the iceberg toward paying all the people back that have jumped on us in the past and all the people out there across America who have seen fit to put aside the personal differences and support us. Brother, we're going to pay the people back. We're going to beat some people up for you that have seen fit, no matter what we said, no matter what we've done, to support us because you know we're right. Thank you very much.
All right, Jim Cornette, thank you. Let's go back to ringside with Jim Ross and Bob Cox.
Cornette, you know, we mentioned him earlier, no stranger to controversy. He's firing on all cylinders here as usual. Say what you want about him. He's money on the mic, has a great mind, a wealth of knowledge, but he is controversial.
The problem is it does make people like Bobby suffer. Bobby's never been a talker on the mic. Me and you've both met Bobby. Bobby's another one of the guys that are just phenomenal. Super nice guy. Give you the shirt off his back if you need it. Right there to help you. Funny, but he's not a talker. He won't talk on the mic, and you know that's why Cornette was so good with him.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I wish Cornette would shut up.
Yeah.
It was a good pairing. I wish he'd be quiet long enough to get them in the Hall of Fame, but
yeah.
Either way, you know, he's set in his ways. Good for him.
JR and Bob Caudle recap the night, and then Schiavone and Luger end the show.
Elton fans, the month of December is a tremendous month for all of us in the NWA. This man right here, the total package, Lex Luger, I know right now, in the greatest shape of your life, you are prepared to do battle. We look forward to seeing big things out of you for the remainder, especially of 1988.
Well, you know, Tony Schiavone, I'm sweating right now. It's been a hot night here in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in front of millions of viewers. It's been a tremendous pleasure being here with you. I've enjoyed the competition. I've enjoyed watching the match, but most of all, I wish I had my tights on and was out there myself. It's been a long time coming for Nature Boy and the Total Package to have a clear-cut winner in a match. And that's what I wanted all along. And Lex Luger is ready to do whatever is believed he can do. And I know I'm in the greatest physical condition. I'm in the greatest mental condition. My confidence factor is at an all-time high for Ric Flair, and I'm waiting on you.
Okay, for Lex Luger, Jim Ross, Bob Caudle, I'm Tony Schiavone. Superstation TBS. Have a good night, everybody.
This was far from being the best clash, but it was basically a go-home show for Starrcade 88. But it wasn't bad. I think we just talked about it, but what was your favorite match or segment?
Oh, the main event, without a doubt, the main event. It was just those guys in the ring did such a great job. And it's hard to pick, man, because you've got – so many talent, you know, so much legend, so much talent in this. But I definitely say the main.
So, overall, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle, thumbs up.
Oh,
I give it a. I don't know. Not I'm quite only a going, thumbs up, but
I'm only going thumbs up. I'm not going thumbs up for the quality, but I'm actually going thumbs up more because of the mark out moments for all the legends and all the guys that. And they were in their prime, you know. They were just, you know. Pay per view overall, probably like you said, not the best clash, obviously, but the talent alone was just top notch.
Well, we put it out to the fans again. Give them four options: NWA Clash 4 from '88, WWF In Your House 19, WWF Capital Carnage, and WWF Armageddon. All coincided with this week, and 46% voted for this show.
That's really good. You know, I was an In Your House fan. I used to love it. I remember the first one where they gave the house away or whatever. And I really kind of was expecting that. But I'm glad that they picked this. I mean, this was a good choice.
You might be in luck next week because that's I think there's two In Your Houses on the next one. So, all right, man. I think that about wraps it up. If you guys are listening to us, you can watch us on YouTube. You won't get all the bells and whistles and sound bites because YouTube gets onto us for that, but you can see our ugly faces. But if you're watching us on YouTube and you'd rather listen to all the sound bites and clips and all that, then go check us out because we are about anywhere you can find a podcast, you name it, we're there. Follow us on Facebook at The Slop Drop, on Twitter at The Slop Drop 1. And remember, if you check us out, leave us a good rating, good review, and all that good stuff. And we like to interact, so if there's something in particular you want us to cover, let us know. We got the Sloppies coming up. I don't think you were a part of that last year.
I wasn't.
But we asked if you want us to do it again, and the majority voted yes. And so the Sloppy Awards coming up in a couple
of weeks. I'm ready.
The least favorite, 2020.
So, man, I tell you, that's going to be... There's a lot of content to cover there.
Had a lot of submissions, and it was really hard narrowing them down to four each. And I had some people like, why did this make the list? You know, a lot of people suggested it. So, all right, man, that about wraps it up. Until next time, we're out of here.
Goodbye and good night.
Thank you.